I'd like to start with a reading. Another Susie friend that I care a lot about, her name is Meg Barnhouse. I've read some of her work before here. I highly recommend her. She's kind of a saucy one, very cool, both a musician and a minister, now at the UU Church in First UU Church of Austin, Texas. She also is married to a wonderful woman, Kyra Hartwood, who's actually been here before to perform for us. Meg writes this book, The Rock of Ages at the Taj Mahal, and the piece I want to share with you is called All Will Be Well. All will be well, and all will be well, and all manner of things will be well. This is one of the mantras used in the Christian meditation tradition. Don't think it comes from a dewy-eyed Pollyanna. The woman to whom it is credited, Dame Julian of Norwich, is the same one who, when her mule got stuck on a mountain road in a rainstorm, dismounted, shook her fist at the sky, and shouted, God, if this is how you treat your friends, it's no wonder you don't have many. Lately, I've been experimenting with repeating, all will be well, and all will be well, and all manner of things will be well. I try it out in different situations. Sometimes I feel stupid affirming that all will be well. What about things that aren't well and don't look like they're ever going to be well? It's hard to see the whole picture from where I stand at this moment in my life. Here's what I do know. I know that I have a choice between hope or despair when viewing the world and my future. Each choice has equal evidence in its favor. Each is affirmed and underscored by my life experience. How do I decide between them? I choose the one that brings the most joy, the most healing, the most compassion to my life and to the world. In despair, I'm no good to anyone. I stop functioning well. I drag through the days. I deal with horrors that haven't even happened yet. I don't enjoy my children, food, sex, or any of the dazzling pleasures of my life. When my mother was dying, she said to me, Maggie, everything that happens to me is good. That was a statement of her faith. I was a cynical 23-year-old seminary student. My mother's faith sounded naive and silly. I was in despair over her suffering. But she was not in despair, and it was her suffering. Suddenly it seemed presumptuous to despair over her suffering when she was not choosing to. As I experiment with this mantra and risk feeling stupid, which is a feeling I despise, I ask myself, which is more stupid? To despair my whole life just in case things aren't going to end well, or to live in joy and hope my whole life, whether or not things turn out well. I'm going to keep singing this mantra to my fears. All will be well, all will be well, all manner of things will be well. So, why grief? Why today? When we were looking at the services that we needed to cover in these next few months, this one really stuck out. We needed to talk about, to embrace some things. We know we're not in the best place right now here at Brew. And for me, because I'm program council chair, I have the opportunity to be up here with my colleagues sharing today. I'm going to start with talking about my own grief. In the last 2 years or so, I've lost my mother, my mother-in-law, my mentor, two dogs, and my daughter's gone off to college. So it's been a really shifting time in our lives, our family, in terms of the grief we've experienced. In this community, we've lost beloved members and friends through death and separation. It is this community, however, that many of us turn to for a safe harbor. It's my safe place to deepen my spirituality and do good in the world. It's our place for seeking and serving. But in this community, perhaps you, as I have felt, there's a bit of a hole in my heart. It doesn't feel like a safe place, and it feels like there's a lot of darkness right now. Many of us feel like this harbor is fairly rocky, weathering a storm that shakes at our very foundation and threatens to break us apart. From my place as a program council chair, having taken this on this year, I came onto the board. I'd been an RE for many, many years, let go of that and wanted to contribute in some way, and I figure I can run meetings. I do a lot of that in my daily life. I can do this. But it's been an interesting journey being program chair and listening to some of the challenges that people are feeling. Here's the things I see, that there's good work started, lots of good work going on. But I had a lot of questions about, well, what about this, and what about this, and should we be thinking about this? And I think I probably made Beth a little crazy in transitioning onto the board that way. In my meetings with committee leaders, I discovered that people were tired, frustrated, confused, burnt out. In our efforts to find volunteers, we've had committee fairs. We put it in Roundup. The same people step forward. And those same people who lead this congregation are frazzled. Communication has been a challenge. There's been shifting access to communication. And I think we're now on a good path, thanks to Gretchen and Eric willing to take on the newsletter again. That piece of communication is critical, because I've learned in my public life also that when people don't know what's going on, we make it up. I also had confusion in understanding the minister's role in this leadership process. How engaged was he with the program committee? How much wasn't he? And trying to understand that. Last fall, when we had our board retreat, one of the things I shared was I had a strong sense that there's a lot of hurt. Even at that time, we were feeling like there's a lot of pain, a lot of hurt. There are members of our community, both our minister and others, who are desperately hurting, and that we as a board have a responsibility to try to shift that, to start the healing process. So now things have passed, and today's service is designed to do just that, to take the first, the second, the third step toward healing, to understand that we are all grieving in different ways, experiencing a sense of loss and hurt. Other speakers are going to address this aspect of grief in different ways for themselves and for their community. And my specific hope is that through reflection and ritual, we leave here today with a real understanding that is during this grieving process, we can better ourselves and our community, that we learn how to be better together, and we let go of that which divides us. In tarot readings, the death card is a scary one. One of my first experiences with tarot, I drew the death card. And then I learned about a parallel card in the Osho Zen deck. Now, in a traditional tarot deck, death is a scary thing. It typically implies an end, possibly of a relationship or interest, and therefore implies an increased sense of self-awareness. In the Osho Zen deck, it's a much more affirming way of looking at transformation. And as soon as I began to make that connection of death and loss to that real sense of transformation, that began to change my perspective on it. It's far more affirming and understanding. It's a time for a deep let go, allowing any pain, sorrow, or difficulty just to be there, accepting its facticity. It's very much like the experience of Buddha when, after years of seeking, he finally gave up knowing that there was nothing more that he could do. And that very night, he became enlightened. Transformation comes, like death, in its own time, and like death, it takes you from one dimension into another. Now, consulting my goddess traditions, one of the things I decided to do yesterday was purify my goddess cards with fire and then think about what was it that I hoped would be a message for Brew from the goddess tradition. And Lakshmi decided to join us today. She's the benevolent Hindu goddess who brings abundance to those who call upon her, time, money, knowledge, opportunity. And she works with Ganesh, the elephant-headed deity, known as the overcomer of obstacles. Together, they help to release fear and accept abundance. Lakshmi comes to this community, and her message is, stop worrying. Everything is going to be fine. hold positive thoughts and intentions. All will be well. All will be well. All manner of things will be well.
Good morning. Dictionary.com defines grief as keen mental suffering or distress over affliction or loss, sharp sorrow, painful regret. After 40 years in healthcare as a nurse, a paramedic, and an educator, and nearly 63 years of life on this planet, I have seen and felt grief in many forums beyond the walls of the hospital or the back of an ambulance. Through the deaths of beloved family and friends of all ages, through divorce, the onset of disability and dementia, as well as the insights I've gained from my students, active duty military medical personnel who take my class at GW. For just as birth and death are an inevitable part of life, so too is loss and grief. How we deal with life's challenges, such as these, is based on who we are and what we believe, and how we deal those challenges, and how we deal with those challenges is also a choice. As a young nurse working in critical care, I found it easy to buy into Dr. Elizabeth Kubler-Ross's five stages derived from her work with dying patients: denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance. The stage theory, which formed the central theme of her acclaimed book on death and dying, published in 1969, quickly created a paradigm for how Americans view death. And it also became a paradigm for how Americans grieved. It was linear. It was logical, and based on my experiences of death and dying, grief and loss at that point in my life, it made perfect sense. And then I got to hear her speak at a conference in 1976, and I was a total acolyte. The stages made the whole process of death and dying and grieving so tidy, all neatly packaged and tied up with a tasteful black ribbon. And while the stage theory captured the public's imagination and my own, the reality is that grief is far messier and more tenacious. In the years since, I have come to realize, and in fact learned the hard way, that grief is not linear, it's not logical, and it's not tidy. I've learned that grief does not only follow the death of the loved one, but it comes in multiple sizes for the variety of life's losses, both large and small, that we encounter. I have learned that grief is the natural, normal, necessary reaction to a loss. We repeatedly encounter it, and it's essential to the process of becoming more fully human. I've also learned that grief carries with it some measure of guilt. For words not spoken, for actions not taken, for gratitude not shared. I have learned that sometimes grief also carries with it a sense of relief, for suffering now over, for unrelenting tension now eased, and for simmering anger now quelled. And I have learned that grief can be a gift, a process that lets us let go of that which was or wasn't, and to ready ourselves for that which is to come. So while I was coming to those same realizations, so too was Dr. Kubler-Ross. And to quote Megan O'Rourke's article in The New Yorker on good grief, she says, at the end of her life, Kubler-Ross herself recognized how far astray our understanding of grief had gone. And in her 2005 book on grief and grieving, she insisted that the stages were never meant to help tuck messy emotions into neat packages. I use a textbook written by Madeline Drench called Psychosocial Aspects of Health and Illness for the class I teach at GW, which interestingly has this exact same name. And she says that when people think of loss and grieving, they often relate these phenomena to dying and death. Loss also encompasses meaningful separations, dashed dreams, revised expectations, and shattered conceptualizations of independence, strength, and security. In addition, illness, impairments, and disability involve loss, even when death is not part of the equation. Reactions to loss are affected by how individuals perceive it and the meaning they attach to what is lost. Although responses to loss are as individualized as those who experience it, grieving is both natural and universal. It is a psychological and a physiologic response to loss that occurs and befalls every age and culture. I said I was a teacher, and I like models to teach with. So there are a number of theories, just like the stage theory, or models that can be that you can choose from. But my two current favorites on the subject of grief are really very complementary to one another. And it's important that there is no normal to grief. Grief is normal. Whatever is normal for you is normal for grief. Whatever is normal for someone else is normal for grief for them. It ebbs, it flows, it's circular, it's linear, it's a roller coaster. It is what it is. So the first model is based on the acronym TEAR. T stands for to accept the reality of the loss. E, experience the pain. A, adjust to the new environment. And R, reinvest in the new reality. I said that this was complementary, but I really think that the hospice, UConn Hospice, which developed the next model, is, and their model is based on the First Nations medicine wheel. It's the same basic principles, and if you take the TEAR and interpose them, they actually could form the cross pieces on the wheel. Loss occurs in the midst of a regular life, ups and downs, daily frustrations, all that comes and goes. Something happens. We're in shock. We're in disbelief. It's confusing. And then we start to acknowledge it. But that doesn't stop us from being angry. It doesn't stop us from feeling guilty or sad. We're trying to make sense of all of it, the chaotic stage. And then you start putting it together and make it understand, adjusting to that new world. And finally, with that adjustment, you look at the things that need to happen to go forward. And in doing so, you integrate it back into your life, and you move back to what is routine and life as usual. And while this may be an interesting intellectual exercise for some, I'm sure that some of you are going, well, so what about Brew? And what about now? Based on my past role on the Committee on Shared Ministry and my current role as your president, sadly, I have been intimately aware of the challenges and potential consequences facing Brew and Reverend Scott long before he announced his resignation. Over the past 17 months, I've fielded calls and emails from individuals who had difficult interactions with Reverend Scott or concerns about his performance. Over the past 17 months, I've had conversations and emails from Reverend Scott about his sense of being on the receiving end of difficult conversations from members of our community. It has been an enormous challenge to balance confidentiality for those parties involved while reconciling what I knew of those same parties based on my own interpersonal relationships with them and knowledge of them. Throughout the fall and winter, I've worked closely with Reverend Scott, the current Committee on Shared Ministry, the board, and our JPD resources to try to find ways to facilitate communication and build and rebuild relationships. But despite the best efforts of all parties involved, it was not enough to rebuild the lost trust, or in his own words, to have an effective ministry that led to Scott's resignation. So where am I on the wheel? To be quite honest, I began feeling that loss was looming in the early fall. I desperately hoped that all of our combined efforts would put us back on track and that we could move forward together. By the time that Reverend Scott made the announcement of his resignation, I had, on some level at least, acknowledged that the loss was inevitable. But that didn't stop me from feeling sad for Scott, for Brew, for me. Because I was part of the search committee that found Scott and brought him here and said, we are together, we will be one, we will have a long and happy ministry. It also didn't stop me from being angry at Scott, at Brew, and at myself. And it didn't stop me from feeling guilty. There are plenty of woulda, coulda, shouldas to contemplate on this whole situation. But the fact remains that I can't turn back the clock and make things right. I can only learn what lessons this mess has to teach me. And for the short term, at least for me, I'm going to focus on three things. And those are the first three UU principles as we move forward through this time of transition. First principle, the inherent worth and dignity of every person. And for me, my focus is going to be the constant reminder that it applies to everyone. Member, friend, staff, stranger, people I don't even know I don't know yet. Second principle, justice, equality, and compassion in human relations, with my focus being on compassion and empathy. As I told somebody yesterday, I believe that it is possible to have frank, painful, even disagreeable conversations without both parties feeling bruised and broken. And if we do it from a compassionate perspective, I think that that can happen, even if the only outcome is that we agree to disagree. And lastly, the third principle that I'm going to be working on is the acceptance of one another and encouragement to spiritual growth. And for this, I'm going to borrow from Stephen Covey, to seek first to understand and then be understood. So like you, I'm working on my grief. Some days are easier than others. And I'd like to close with a portion of the letter that I wrote to you that accompanied Scott's resignation letter, because I still believe it to be true. When relationships don't evolve as anticipated, it can be easy to get caught up in fault-finding and finger-pointing, neither of which is beneficial to anyone and certainly serves no greater good. I believe we would be best served by contemplating what we bring to Brew, what Brew brings to us, and clarify what our expectations are for Brew. Brew is filled with energetic, enthusiastic, and passionate people. And now more than ever, we need to use that energy, enthusiasm, and passion to have tough but honest, heartfelt conversations as we do the hard work that needs to be done to honor our past, understand our present, and define our future by demonstrating that we are truly a safe community for seeking and service. Blessed be.
Janet and I first came to Brew in 1992, and from the first time we walked in the door, we'd been attending other UU churches for about 3 years. From the first time we walked in the door, we knew there was something special about this. People talked to us, people were engaged, they helped us find a way into it. And it's been a very special kind of community for our family. My children are graduating high school and starting to head into the last year of college. And I can honestly say, they would not be the bright, amazing, open, caring people that they are without Brew. They all came through the RE program, and so it's been really, really special to our family. I have to own my grief about what's going on. And it may not be the same things that some other people are grieving about. I am grieving for Scott. If we really believe in the worth and dignity of everyone, I feel in some way that I have failed because he didn't feel welcome here. And he didn't feel the love. And so I grieve for that. And I hope him the best healing that he can find with his family, his new arrival, and the future of his life. I also grieve for people that leave congregations because of a minister. I grieved that when Reverend Greg came to us as an interim, that we lost people that just didn't connect. I grieve for the people we lost when Reverend Scott came that didn't connect to him as well. And I grieve for the people who have resigned because of the difficult times that we're having and what they perceive to be the truly unfair treatment that Reverend Scott received. I think that we are bigger than any one minister or any one lay leader or any one person. To me, that's part of the wonder of being a Unitarian Universalist. It's not about the one, but about the many. And so I am very sorry that we have come to a place where we could no longer find a way together forward. I also grieve a little bit, just as part of being a UU, that one of the things the UUA tells us is as we grow and get bigger, it's time to put away the open mic, the joys and sorrows, the welcoming, the polylog. That's a personal grief for me, because that is the sacrament of our lives. And I'm fine with not having polylog every month, every week. I'm absolutely fine with that. But I find that when I am most spiritual is when I am receiving and caring for the joys and sorrows of the people that I share this community with. So I am grieving. But I also have faith. I have faith in our congregation. Let me say, there is a magic in brew, and if you have never been to another church or to another Unitarian Universalist church, you may not know, but this is a special place, even with all of its issues. It is a magical, wonderful place, and I have faith that that place isn't lost. It's still here. We have some work to do. I think we need to revisit our covenant of right relations and own that as a congregation, that when we have conflict, there's a place and a proper time to express that conflict, and then there's the time when you just look at someone face to face and you love them and you disagree with them. We clearly have some work to do. I have faith in music. Thank you so much for sharing the gifts that you bring to this. Anise, of course, is amazing, but there are people all throughout this congregation that produce music and love it and that just listen and love it. And I have faith that that music will help us as we move forward. I also have faith in our lay leaders, the people who step up when we need them, the people who don't ask how much is it going to cost me or how much time is this going to take, but who say, there is a need, and I will do what I can to meet that need. I have faith that we will make our way through this. Let me just say, by way of introduction of our rock ritual, that life is an amazing experience. And there are ups and downs, and I am grieving for some of what we have lost, a little bit of that innocence about Brew just being this wonderful place, and it turns out we have work to do. But I know that together we can do this, and we can make it a place where not my children, but someone else's children can grow up to be bright, interesting, fascinating, open, loving people. And that place is here. Thank you for listening.